ॐ नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Chapter 5 Narad Muni Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam for Vyasadeva. Narada Muni appeared at Vyasa's ashram to confirm his worst fears, but he also confirmed that his disciple's mistake could be rectified if he composed a work dedicated to the pure glorification of the all-attractive Sri Krishna. The transcendental sound vibration of such a Krishna-conscious work will cleanse the consciousness of any and all living entities that receive it into their hearts. Chapter 6. Conversation between Narada and Vyas. As proof of the power of the Bhagavat Katha and Bhagavata Seva, Narada Muni recounts his past life, when as a 5-year-old son of a maidservant, he chanced to render service to pure Vedantas of the Bhakti Marg. The result that while a mere child, Narada was not only able to withstand as the Lord's will the emotional loss of his mother to snake bite, he went on in life depending upon the Lord alone. Following the footsteps of those great sages who had blessed him with their brief but immeasurable potent association, Narada realized the eternal form of the Lord in his own heart. So he's bringing here, he's pointing out the Mahabharata, the weakness that is there, and then along with that, the power of the Vaishnavas. So this is something very important because, as we see from before in the first chapters, that they were establishing that approaching the lotus feet of the Lord is the way to attain His grace. And so then in doing that, then that means associating with the Vaishnavas, like that. You know? Associating with the Vaishnavas. Does that make some sense? So, in this association of Vaishnavas, that's actually the foundation of the whole devotional process. It's not separate. It's not that by just following some rules that on one's own one will attain perfection. It sounds very nice, but unfortunately, God's not interested in that. Right? We may be, but He's not. So, we must be able to somehow or another appreciate and take advantage of the association of the Vaishnavas. If we can do that, then some benefit is there. Otherwise, not so much benefit. Is this understood? So now that means that we have to somehow or another be able to appreciate Vaishnavas. And that has to be very much part of our meditation. We may think, well, okay, that's nice if someone really has good qualities. Right? Somebody really has good qualities. Then that's okay. That's good. But if they don't, you know, we have to recognize that and say so. And saying so is important for us to say, because then, you know, we wouldn't want to be cheated by any bad example, bad qualities, anything like that. Right? So then we can spend our time finding fault. Unfortunately, finding fault is, of all the anartas, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's the most dangerous. Also Lord Chaitanya. Because kutinati means we find fault, we make politics, we're duplicitous, these things. So it's a package. So if somebody regularly can find fault in everybody, they are political, they are duplicitous. So you don't have to, how you say, worry about psychoanalyzing the person. It's automatic. You know? Like that. Just like if it barks and it wags its tail, you know it's a dog. Right? Like that. So it's very easy. They go together. what proportion is more? There may be a little more political, maybe a little less political, or, you know, like this. But these qualities, because this is kutinati, fault finding. So if you feel that it's your service, or it's an important part of your service, to find fault when it's not, right? It means if you're a teacher, you're responsible. You're an authority, you're responsible. You're a parent, you're responsible. Those persons you're responsible, finding their weaknesses and helping them get through it, that's service. The people you're not responsible for, to just find fault, then it's not our business. That's their business. They have their authorities, that's their business. It's not our business. We're wasting our time and everyone else's. So, point being that the power of the Vaishnava means to be able to appreciate the Vaishnavas. See, we may feel, okay, this person has this fault, that fault. Okay, then we have to place ourselves. Are we a neophyte? Are we a Madhyama? Are we an Uttama? Okay, so whatever that may be, then, so on our platform of maturity and advancement, we're able to see the faults of others. Okay, nice. And that disturbs us. Okay, fair enough. And therefore, the association of Vaishnavas isn't so important because of all the faults that they manifest. And we only are looking for the best, the pure, the real deal. Okay, fine. And that's coming just from our particular maturity and devotional service. You know, okay, devotional service is powerful. So then what about the great souls who come down, who are on the, definitely on the transcendental platform, and they have to associate with the likes of us. So the disparity between their position and ours is so much greater than anybody in Krishna consciousness that we ourselves are criticizing. Does that make sense? So if we're a neophyte criticizing a neophyte, can't tolerate it, because how is it that the Madhyamas and Uttamas are able to find some good quality? Right? Once Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he lived in his house, and he lived upstairs and the sannyasis lived downstairs. So I'm not sure exactly what happened. I think a conversation came up about one of the brahmacharis or one of the devotees there. And no one really had anything good to say about him. They were all making their comments. And after kind of been around the room and everyone had said something, then, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lived upstairs, there must have been an inside stair, so he could hear whatever they say. And he came down, and then right in the middle, unannounced, just said, he keeps his clothes very clean and nice. He had left his body, okay. And then he turned around and went back up the stairs. So that we can see is, I mean, we could probably safely say that, you know, we're dealing here with the Uttam Bhakta, you know, making a comment on the behavior of the Madhyamas. Right? They're able to find fault. So actually, even though it's a very strange phenomena, and it's one of those things you could probably make a, you know, a believe it or not, you know, television show out of, the theme that actually the more advanced you are, the more ability you have to find good in others. Not bad. So if someone prides themselves that they can so easily find any fault in others and that, then strangely enough, amongst the Vaishnava community, that's not considered advancement at all. It's not even considered a good quality. In fact, it's recommended to even avoid the association of such a person. Of course, in the modern community, this person would be very good, because if you can, means the principle is I'm not very advanced, but if others are less advanced, that puts me more advanced than them, right? So I'm senior to others because everybody else is a write-off, right? It's a common thing. We're good because everybody else is bad, right? You see politicians, they use the same principle. Vote for me because this other guy's terrible. It's never vote for me because I'm doing this and that. What do you think of the other guy? I don't know. Or, yeah, well, he's, you know, he's a nice guy and, you know, may the best man win. You don't hear that. Does that make some sense? So that's the thing. It's very easy to find fault, because the more in Krishna consciousness, the more you know, of course. So the more you can find. But the whole point, why Krishna gives you that ability to see that fault, it's not that the quality itself is a problem. It's who you use it on that's the problem. Right? So we use it on others with pride. But you're actually supposed to use it on yourself without pride. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the method. One would say, well, why we make the point, use it on yourself without pride? Because if you use it on yourself with pride, then it creates what's called, where you don't, lack of self-esteem, lack of self-confidence, right? Because one would think that the person with lack of self-confidence is very humble. No, they're extremely proud. But they don't want to make a mistake. Right? Does that make sense? It's just the inversion of it. Right? Right? Affection and hatred. They look so different, but they're the same thing. It's just a matter of which way it's applied. Right? Heat and cold. It's temperature. It's just one's hot, one's cold. So lack of self-confidence and pride are the same entity. Because I'm not special, therefore I shouldn't do anything, because then, you know, people may make comments or this or that, or my social status may be reduced. So if we're confident, then yes, my social status is good, everything's good. Does it make some sense?
It can also be that if I cannot be the best, I'll be the worst.
Oh, if I can't be the best, I'll be the worst, because at least then you're best in something. You know, that's a common thing. You see, criminal mentality tends towards that, is I make my endeavor, and then everybody says, oh, you're bad, so okay, I'll show you what bad is. You know? Like that, you know. That was
yes. I just mentioned an example. Javataka Maharaj said, once Srila Prabhupada came to the temple and he started praying to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, please give me your mercy. I'm the most fallen, the most lowly, the most miserable. And Srila Prabhupada just cut him off and said, you're not the most anything.
Well, that was him that past time. Okay, I always heard that. I didn't know who it was. You're not the most anything. Yeah, because we say we're the most fallen. No, Jagai Madai, they already got that one wrapped up. You know, like that. So it's like, you have to get in line. You know? That's the thing. The jiva has to recognize and just live with the fact. It means if you can accept this, it just makes life so much easier. The jiva is that way, the not the most of anything. Right? We're the smallest of all the energies. Right? We're 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. Right? I mean, that's small. Right? And now you compare it to the other two energies, which are the external potency, which is 1/4 of the cosmic, 1/4 of eternity, unlimited. And the internal potency, which is 3/4 of unlimited. Okay? So, if we get used to the fact that we're small, we have our place, but we're small. And so, therefore, whatever we do, we follow somebody. That's the whole point here. is that we're going to, in the spiritual world, be following other devotees. So technically speaking, they're the devotees, and we're their assistants. By becoming their assistants, in this way, we become devotees. Right? But they're devotees, they always were devotees, always will be devotees. We're the ones that are not devotees. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why Krishna says, someone who says he's my devotee is not. But someone who says he's the devotee of my devotee, he's my devotee. Because that's the position of the jiva. Does that make sense? You know, specifically. Internal potency has both. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So if that's understood, then it's we're always going to be following somebody. That means we have to have seniors, we have to have leaders, we just have to. Just the way we are. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have a spoon. Okay, the spoon can say, okay, I'm going to do my own thing. But the spoon has to get, to be useful as a spoon, has to get liquid from something that's bigger than it. Is able to hold more than it holds. Right? And you say, forget the bowl, I'll just take it straight out of the river. But still, it's got to be a river, or a pond, or a bucket, or, you know, a shoe, anything. But it's got to be something bigger than the spoon. The spoon is not independent of the bowl. Does that make sense? Like that. So if we understand that, then that's our position. We're not independent. And then it works very nicely for us. So this ability to be able to appreciate the Vaishnavas, that's what it takes. If we think about it, basically speaking, if you think, who brought you in contact with Krishna consciousness? Right? We're in material life, and we met somebody on the street or some way, or we somehow or another came to the temple, talked to somebody there. But if you think about it, we talk to somebody or a group of somebodies. But by their association, we became devotees. Right? Isn't it? And much of the time, if you really think about it, those people themselves may have been seen, may not have been. They may have been new bhaktas themselves. Right? So, here it is, a new bhakta comes out, meets us on the street, or talks to us at a Sunday feast, and we join Krishna consciousness. Right? We give up material life and join Krishna consciousness. So, of course, we naturally tend to put the credit on our behalf. You know, it's like, you know, what is it? You know, Arta, Artarti, Jigyasu, and Gyani. Somehow every devotee is a Gyani. Like that. No, I was looking for the truth and this and that, and I was already into all these things before Krishna consciousness, you know, like that, blah, blah. I didn't join because of the halava. No, get that point straight, you know, like that. The other 70% of the movement did, but no, I was like that. So, okay. But the point is the person that talked to you and answered your questions and convinced your jnaniness may have been a new bhakta. So if that potency is there in the new bhakta, then we have to acknowledge and accept devotees are powerful. And I'm sure if you really, you know, put that new bhakta under a, you know, how you say, you know, a microscope and checked, then you might find so many faults and weaknesses and desires and this and that and anomalies and strange things that they do, you know, hide halava under their bed or, you know, whatever it is that they do. Right? Does that make sense? So, but the potency is there. So if we appreciate the potency, we will make advancement. Right? That's how we will make advancement in devotional life, is by appreciating the qualities and potency of devotees. By avoiding the bad qualities of others or bad associates, that's how we'll keep from falling down. Does that make sense? It's not a way you make advancement. You don't make advancement by finding fault in these others. You avoid yourself making a mistake or picking up that quality because you recognize it in the other person. You're wary of it. Does that make sense? Right? Do I make myself healthy by not getting close to the person that has a sickness? No, I keep myself from becoming sick. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, it should never be thought of as a way of advancement or a sign of advancement. Right? It's used simply to keep oneself out of bad association. But actually, advancement is appreciating the devotees. Right? And criticizing the devotees can get yourself lowered in devotional points quicker than the bad association. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. One always has to be careful with that. Okay, any questions on that?
Maharaj, sometimes those devotees that they criticize, they others, they say that, well, in this way we can make progress in our movement, because if we don't criticize others, then we don't improve.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If we criticize others, then we don't improve. But how does that help the person? You'd have to ask them, so how does that technically work? Sounds great. Sounds nice. Okay. How does it work technically? Right? Because devotional service is a science. It's not a sentiment. You know what I'm saying? It's not a sentiment. We're not Protestants. Right? Like that we just find fault. Maybe a good fault. But the point is it doesn't mean that the whole process isn't there. Right? I'm saying you find a fault, great. What are you doing about it? How are you applying that in your life? That's how you advance. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you know, that's like saying by pointing out, oh, there's some food. Oh, and that's rice and that's dal, that's sabji and all that. Does that take care of your hunger? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point is, you find fault, okay, but somehow or another when Upadeshamrita opens, it doesn't start with someone else's fault. Strange, but because Rupa Goswami there is like giving the essence of the devotional process from, you know, the beginning to end in 11 verses. And if I remember right, I may be wrong, I think it's in the 4th or 5th verse, even makes a comment on finding fault in others and that you won't advance. So possibly this person either hasn't read our books or they're actually in a different line than us, a different lineage. They're not a follower of Rupa Goswami. Does that make sense? Means Anartha Nivriti means finding faults in yourself, not in others. Right? Means you have to be intelligent to be able to identify qualities and habits that you don't want to pick up. So you avoid those. Right? But qualities in that they have, those are fine. So you also have to be able to discriminate where you would associate with that person. Does that make sense? Let us say the person is very finicky and trippy about prasad. Never has anything good to say, nothing's ever good enough, this, that, blah. But they're really good, let's say, in chanting their japa. So therefore, in the morning, chanting japa, you might want to sit close to them or, you know, get inspired by their absorption in that. But at prasad, you might want to sit on the other side of the room. Right? So that's what it's for. But it's that's their particular conditioned weakness. But the chanting is so much more powerful. You know what I'm saying? Conditioned nature is there. Probably gives the example of someone's dirty, and they're in the shower, taking a shower, and you're pointing out, oh, this guy's dirty. He's got dirt on his, you know, back there. But it's not like, oh, no, hey, you missed a spot on your back. No, it's that by my pointing out that they have a fault, I somehow or another foolishly think that's a symptom of advancement, and I am advancing by doing that. But how? Technically, how does it work? What is it? I mean, have any of the acharyas mentioned? Do you know of anywhere in our books of the Vedic literature where it's mentioned that by finding fault in others, it is the most important way, or is a important, or even any way connected to advancing? You know what I'm saying? Because even you find the fault, what are you doing about it? Devotional service means activity. So you found the fault. Okay, what are you doing about it? Are you avoiding the association? Finding the fault is not the service. Avoiding the bad association, that's the service. Right? And that's where you would be in that association, but you decide not to take it. You would never associate that with that person in your life. How is that service to find the fault? You know what I'm saying? So unless it's benefiting you or others, what's the meaning? So anartha nivritti means you find your own faults. You know, we have enough. You know, if we're so intelligent, okay, go ahead, find them, work them out. Then work those out. Because the point is that someone who can find their own faults can help others understand their own and get through them. Otherwise, being able to find faults means I can teach you how to find faults in others. But I can find my own faults, I can get over them, then I can teach you how to find your own and get over them. Much more useful. You know what I'm saying? I mean, hey, if you want to find faults, just go outside the front gate, and there's a whole line of guys sitting there on these funny bicycles that got three wheels. Go up and ask them about, you know, if anybody has any fault, you know, in ISKCON or out there. You know, hey, you're walking down that street, you know, I mean, there may be some really bad association on that road there, you know, you could know about some of the shop owners and other rickshaw wallows, and I'm sure they could tell you a lot of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Well,
the
position, even if somebody's in position, when he corrects somebody, always a positive mood is there. Try to help, not to just point out.
Yeah, well, it has
it's
to
very
be
important that they tell. For example, somebody got angry and he says, "See, Bhagavad Gita mentions that if somebody gets angry, then he gets destroyed. Because mental nature will take care. So, would you like to get destroyed? So I guess you don't. So then, don't get angry. Try to control it. You have to get it together to control. Then the positive mood is there because you care for it. He gets destroyed. That so the positive mood is there. Then, but when you point out his mistake, then he will be positive about it and he will think about it and will work on it. But if you tell him that you got angry, then there is negative and then he gets more angry. He gets angry with you also.
That's also like how we deal with somebody, so then we draw the same way, same mood from him. Somebody may be really bad, but if we deal with him nicely and gently, he may be actually a very nice gentleman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Rasa is everyone reciprocates how you deal.
The other point also is actually the conditioned soul, as you were mentioning the point, is looking for. Actually, I'm the best, and then everybody is worse. So therefore, they all have bad qualities. So I have to look for them and find them, and that I'll prove myself that I'm the best.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like just looking like for issues, because and we are not interested in helping them because they will become better than we.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so, anything?
I just read recently 4 or 5 quotes in Mahabharata. It's explained then when we criticize others and mistreat others, their bad qualities come on us.
Yeah. A little known fact. If we criticize someone, then their bad qualities come to us. Right? Like you see, a teacher can find fault in the student because he's already taking their bad qualities. Yes?
You just feel like they say something's happened to you and you just feel like you have to get it off your chest, so you're telling someone, this happened to me and I don't know why she did that, it just seems so, you know, rude or whatever. Like, you're just telling what happened to you, not necessarily out there to criticize, but you're telling your friend because you feel like, what should I do, how should I feel, just for some feedback on Vaishnava, you know, how to react. Is that the same as criticizing? Just telling what happened?
It means you have to be careful. Is it just something happened and they're confused and don't know what to do, or there's actually, you know, some issues there involved that you have to just be careful and see? You know, you can discuss, but then that has to be with those that could actually do something for you. You know what I'm saying? Help in some way. But just to say it just for political effect, then that would be just subtly criticizing. But if it's, you're saying it to someone who could actually give you a proper perspective, and if they do point out what's okay about that person or why they did it, and then we say, oh, you don't support me, then that means you are finding fault. But if it's like, oh, okay, I didn't think of it like that, or this or that, okay, you know, and then you make a determination to correct any fault on your own side. Does that make any sense? Yeah. Now here's another interesting point. It's the opposite of that. It means we hear this, okay, that's the negative. We criticize somebody else and we take their bad qualities. But the inverse is also true. Somebody criticizes us and we don't get angry back, they take our bad qualities. Understand? So, actually, one can be thankful to those persons who criticize others. We're saying this so that you don't become one, but that criticize others and others because they're doing community service of taking on all the other Vaishnavas' bad qualities so that you can advance in devotional service. But it's required that you don't get angry back, otherwise you take them back from them. Right? They take your bad qualities and you make a comment and you get them back. Right? So that's why when they criticize, then one's humbled, then it goes away. You give up like that. There was one Puranic story of some lady, she had done something wrong. And it had multiplied, because of the nature of it, it had multiplied into an amazingly great amount of reaction. And then, so she got the opportunity to get rid of this. And the cure was that she would behave badly, but not do anything wrong. She would just, you know, it's like, well, it means she would dress up and go out into public and behave like a loose woman, but she would never do anything. And so then all the other nice women, then they started to criticize her. And, you know, as long as she didn't get upset with them back, then within time, then all that huge volume of sin was cleared from her because of others criticizing her. Like that. So that method was given by Yamaraj himself. So you can take it as authoritative. You know, that was what he said you could do.
There's another story just nearby here, I think it was Shiva Sangam. When actually Jagaya Maharaj got liberated, and then Mahaprabhu came back from that place, and then he was black. actually apparently black, because he was golden, but he became black because of the sin of Jagai and Madai. So then he was asking, what happened, why you're black? And then Mahaprabhu said, because of the sins of Jagai and Madai. And then, I don't know what was the full story, but then there was a thing that they released Mahaprabhu from that blackness, but then the thing was that blackness will go to those who criticize devotees, or the sin of Jagai and Madai.
Yeah, and that's a lot. That's a lot. Chittagupta couldn't write it down anymore. They said if they took all the papers that he's written and threw them into a bottomless pit, they still couldn't get them all inside. It's like, you name it, every rule there is that can be broken, they broke it. You know? So I'm sure there's plenty still left around, right? So it's not that it's all gone now. We don't have to worry. It's all been distributed, right?
So we can become multiple.
No, because there's other people criticizing. So then, unless you can work, take as your mission to stop everybody else from criticizing Vaishnavas, and you only exclusively are the one criticizing, then possibly you might be able to get somewhere. Unfortunately, the benefits of having stopped everybody else from doing it might have an effect on your ability to, you know, seriously, full-heartedly criticize others. But we could try. I mean, it's like, hey, you know.
You put a pot in there, You put in there, ISBN number, right, or something.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
This is the other side of the principle. So, like, just by finding good qualities in others and appreciating the good qualities, then we develop those good qualities.
Yeah. You hear that? Yeah. Okay.
What was this story about this woman? What
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. It's a Puranic story.
Puranic.
Chapter 7. The son of Drona punished. Blessed by his Guru Maharaj, Srila Vyasadeva has direct spiritual darshan of Sri Krishna and his multifarious energies, including Maya Devi herself. She is difficult even for a soul blessed with anubhava, spiritual vision, to observe. So it's a shame to stand before the Lord due to the nature of her service of keeping wayward souls imprisoned in illusion. Vyasadeva thus sees for himself that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the only hope for reclaiming fallen souls in this Kali age. Suta Goswami now switches the narrative to the aftermath of the great Kurukshetra war. What we observe here is Srila Vyasadeva's redemption of the concluding narrative of the Mahabharata. Before being corrected by his Gurudev, Narad Muni, Vyasa had supposed the Mahabharata would serve as Dharmam Bhagavatam Guhyam Vishuddham Durbodham Yam Gyatvamritam Ashnute, Yamaraj speaking in Bhagavatam 6.3.21. Quote, a work of transcendental Dharma, the essence of which is so confidential that hardly any ordinary human being can understand it. But if they are given a chance to, they will immediately be liberated and returned home back to Godhead. As it turns out, in Bhagavatam 1.5.15, Narad Muni specifically condemns the Mahabharata, as Srila Prabhupada confirms in the purport, for accomplishing exactly the opposite of its author's purpose. Instead of stimulating pure devotional service to Krishna, it stimulates its audience to enjoy the senses. In this chapter 7 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva returns us to the events that followed the conclusion of the Kurukshetra war. But now the stress of the narrative is on Sri Krishna's being the Supreme Lord, instead of just one among many extraordinary personalities who appears in course of the narrative of the kingly dynasties of Greater Bharata, India. Arjuna, in hot pursuit of the Brahma Bandhu Ashwatthama, murderer of 5 youthful Pandava princes, all sons of Queen Draupadi, each by one of her 5 heroic husbands. In verse 17, Arjuna is described as Achyuta Mitrasuta, guided by the infallible Lord as a friend and driver. When Ashwatthama tried to defend himself by firing a nuclear Brahmastra weapon at Arjuna, he later prays to Lord Krishna for help. Krishna advises Arjuna how to safely counter the incoming Brahmastra with one of his own. Arjuna then captured the wicked son of Drona. After some discussion among the Pandavas and Lord Krishna, Ashwatthama was at last released, after his hair and beard were hacked away with a razor sword. though his life was spared.
Razor sharp sword.
Razor sharp sword. Not a rezo sword. I thought it was some new kind of blade or something. Rezo sword. Though his life was spared due to Draupadi's mild disposition, he was left looking like the fool that he was for all the world to see. So here is that he was observing the material energy, and through that, by understanding the culture and everything, how it was functioning, then Vyasadeva was feeling that people would therefore become Krishna conscious. But the point is because the discussion is always about the material energy and the culture, the tendency is one's consciousness goes there. Right? Just like we see, Prabhupada would speak so much about the philosophy, and how do you say? Due to not knowing culture, then even though we discuss about it, devotees would pick up the philosophy very well, but the culture, not necessarily. Right? So you have the opposite problem for those who've grown up in the Vedic culture, is that they know the culture, but not necessarily the philosophy. So even though they hear the philosophy, then they don't register it. They only notice the culture. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here he's pointing out that it didn't do that, what he expected it to do. Because the emphasis was so much on the details of the culture, how to properly perform it. You know, and his purpose was in Krishna's service, but he's written it in such a way that someone who's not necessarily interested would read the book. Right? You know, it'd be like you want the person to take the medicine, so then you do something to the medicine to make it more palatable, but in the process you reduce the potency of the medicine so much it doesn't really do anything. Does that make sense? So you're trying to get everybody to take it, but by doing that, they don't necessarily catch it. So then here we see is that it's pointed out it'll have the opposite effect, because now people will know how to deal with the material energy. Because much of the time people follow religion for artha and artha for karma. So if without religion you're getting artha and karma, who will bother with religion? Right? If you're following religion to attain transcendence, then that's a different thing. You don't worry about artha. You perform the religious duties whether artha comes or not. But much of the time we find that that's not always the case. Does that make some sense? Right? So therefore then we see is that even though he's pointed out very nicely how to operate the material energy for proper religious social interaction or even uplifting interaction, we may miss the point that we're actually supposed to elevate ourselves. And we may especially miss the point that elevation means God consciousness. Right? So then, So now, in doing this and having this understanding, then see here is that Vyasadeva is able to actually understand material energy as she is. Then, in that clear vision, then you can see, then you have to make a clear distinction between Maya and Krishna. Right? Because Yukta Vairagya is, it's Yukta meaning it's engaged, but Vairagya means without attachment. Right? So when we say yukta vairagya, we're engaging things in Krishna's service, that's okay, but are we attached to those things we're engaging? So the degree we're attached to them, then the yukta is more and the vairagya is less. Right? So you have to find a balance. If there's too much vairagya, you won't work with it. If there's too much yukta, then you can't actually, you know, connect it to Krishna. Right? So it has to be a proper balance. So then, seeing this, because it's 100,000 verses, the Gita is only 700. Right? That's, you know, not even 1%, 1%. It's less than a thousandth of a percent. And then throughout the Bhagavatam, there'll be references to Krishna and this and that, but you might think he's just a friend, a powerful person, special. You might not catch he's the Supreme Lord. So then, he then brings it out that he comes to the end of the battle, because the whole Mahabharata is about the Pandavas and then their whole life in trouble with their brothers, and culminating in the Kurukshetra War, because after the war, then basically the Bhagavatam wraps up pretty quickly in comparison. And we see that the main bulk actually of the work is the war itself, right? The most voluminous is actually the war. So then to start after the war, then it's an interesting point that's been brought out here, is that you already finished actually the theme of the Mahabharata. And then we see all the interaction between the Pandavas and Krishna. Right? So then now that becomes more prominent, more obvious, that Krishna is actually the purpose. Right? And then that concludes, as we will see later. Okay. Then we see Arjuna then is chasing Ashwatthama. Now Ashwatthama has behaved in a way that one would say is not good. And he's a Brahmin, that's confirmed, no one will say he's not. Now one could say, because he's done this, he's not a Brahmin. That would be saying that, let's say there's a dog, because the dog ripped up your couch, it's no longer a dog. Right? Because the dog's supposed to be at the door, and is supposed to behave nicely and do what you want it to do, and protect the house, and keep away bad elements. Right? That's what you keep a dog for. But it has ripped up the couch. So it is no longer a dog. Right? We can accept that logic, no? So then how would we accept the logic that Ashwatthama is a Brahmin, and because he's done something that's unbrahminical, he's no longer a Brahmin? Right? A Brahmin is a nature of what your ability is in. Brahmin means you know Shastra, you can teach Shastra. So by doing that act of killing the Pandava princes, did he no longer know the scriptures? Did he no longer do his achmans or take his bath three times a day? Or you understand? Means it is a tarnish on his character, but it in no way makes him no longer a Brahmin. You understand? Those who don't understand Varnashram, what it is, can make such comments. Right? But those who know Varnashram, you cannot change the nature. Arjuna said, yes, I'll just go to the forest. And Krishna laughed. God laughed. Said, how are you going to get away from the modes of nature? You're going to behave like a Kshatriya anyway. So now the question is that quality engaged in a purified way or unpurified way? Right? Does that make sense? Nature does not change, but you can purify and improve the qualities of that nature. That's what you can do. So also we hear very common, you have to change your nature. That's impossible. That's also a foolish statement. You can purify your nature, but you can't change it. Oh, you're a boy, you have to change your nature. Like that, become a girl. No, you can't. Well, at least I don't think you can. So, you know what I'm saying? You can't change that. Someone's a manager, they will remain a manager. They may have bad qualities, but they're a manager. Now, you can improve their qualities, so that in performing their managerial duties, then they don't disturb others. But you can't change the fact that he's a manager. It's not possible. Does this make sense? So now, according to Gita, you're supposed to engage your conditioned nature in the Lord's service. That's what Krishna says, how you purify yourself. He says you have a right to perform your duty. So if it's your nature, if it's confirmed, then it's your right. But you're supposed to do it properly. Does that make sense? So that was the whole point, is Ashwatthama has killed the sons of the Pandavas, that which is improper. It's despicable. But when they were brought before these kings, who are, you know, the greatest kings, then they decided that, no, he's a Brahmin, he's the son of our teacher, then he's not to be killed. But an appropriate punishment is there. Does that make sense? Appropriate for his Brahminical status. Right? And to make things worse is after he spends, you know, 3,000 years walking around smelling stool and urine everywhere he goes, then in the next Kali Yuga, he's going to be the Vyasadev. Because, strangely enough, someone can be purified. The concept of eternal damnation does not hold water. Right? If there is such a thing as eternal damnation, there would be nobody around here. You know, they go to hell and stay there. But they go there and then they come back and they're born here again. If they have a body here, it means, in other words, if they're not Lord Brahma, not the Prajapatis, not the great sages, and not possibly, let's say, the primary demigods, there's a good chance they already went to hell and they're coming back again. Right? It means they come in as Brahma, from Bhauma Yifal and Prajapatis and down to the sages and these other very prominent personalities. And after that, come down here, and then from here you go to hell, and then you work your way back up again. So, I mean, of course, around here we're not much that we're knowing bumping into, you know, Brahma and these other Prajapatis and the Nakshatras and other such personalities. So there's a good chance that everybody's spent time in hell. So they're all back, so what happened to the eternal damnation principle? Right? It's a fallacy. It just is there to make people with minimal faith feel good. That's all. Right? Someone who stands very strong on the eternal damnation, you can know it for certain that person has not very strong faith in devotional service. It's another very simple formula. Right? Because that's the whole point. Devotional service is completely different. It's real. It's not illusion. Otherwise, what we're doing is we have so much faith in material energy, we think that material things actually have meaning. They have consequences, but they don't really have any meaning. Devotional service, that has substance. That has meaning. That's why, then, if the qualities are there, that's what's seen, not something else. So this very instructive point is that someone can make a but then it goes on. Prabhupada was like that. We may say we're not Prabhupada, but then who are you following? Whose example are you taking if you don't take Prabhupada's? No one said that you have to be Prabhupada to do what he did. He said, do what I do. You take his example, follow that. But to say, well, we're not Prabhupada, we can't do that, we don't have that potency, then why are you taking a leadership position? Right? You're supposed to follow that example. He set that example. Someone has problems, you put them in a situation where those problems can't manifest anymore, but in a place that's suitable for their nature. Because by performing devotional service according to your conditioned nature, that's how you're going to get purified. That's what Bhagavad Gita says. So that's another point. Is not only do they not have faith, they haven't read Bhagavad Gita. And if they say they have read Bhagavad Gita, they didn't understand Bhagavad Gita. Because Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, perform your duties, right? Somehow they always use this politically incorrect term. With detachment, another politically incorrect term. How do you say? With knowledge, not very recommended thing, gets in the way of smooth management. And thinking of Krishna, okay, that's okay, as long as you don't take it overboard. And to please Krishna, that one's okay. So, as we see, is devotees catch the last two, but the first one's performing duty in knowledge with detachment somehow has been missed. Now that's the point Krishna says over and over and over and over again. Right? That's the operation for us on our platform. Ultimately, you want to go beyond that you're doing it just to please Krishna, not because it's your conditioned nature. Right? That's sarvadharma parityaja. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So that's the thing. Engaging, being able to purify and deal with them according to conditioned nature, not to, oh, we have a problem with a disturbance on the platform of pranamoy, which deals with justice, morality, and economics. And so, therefore, because we have issues, anyone who'd make a problem there is really bad. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. We have to be very, very careful of falling into this trap. It's a common trap. I mean, all world religions function on this trap. Right? Because they're dealing with justice and morality as opposed to religion. You understand? Morality is a upadharma, or a, let's say, a branch of religion. It's not religion itself. It's a branch. Means you follow the duties according to your conditioned nature. That's proper. And then within that, then there are details of what that means. You know, be nice, don't steal, don't be violent, those things like that. But those are secondary. The main thing is, but in what forum do I be nice? To what forum am I not nonviolent? What does that mean, nonviolence? Does that make sense? Therefore, you have to have the structure of knowing what my conditioned nature is and how it should be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So that's what Varnashram is. What is your conditioned nature and how it can be engaged in the Lord's service? Right? Then along with that, you're supposed to be a nice guy. Right? That's morality. You understand? So morality is important because of social interaction and all that. You have to deal with other people. But it itself doesn't stand on its own. Otherwise, you have nice guys, but what's the culture? What do you engage? You know what I'm saying? What's the Vedic, you have a dress, you have food, you have ways of greeting, you have doing everything, it's all set. You know that this is of good quality that I can engage in Krishna's service. And it matches the natures. In the Western culture, what is it? Right? What is Christian food? What is Christian dress? What are the considerations that a Christian considers in arranging his sleeping or his toilet or shaving or cutting his nails, brushing his teeth? How does a good Christian brush his teeth? Tell me. Is there an answer to any of this? Absolutely not. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Dress, they'll say, should be modest, appropriate. Okay, nice. But that's it. Bedroom. Okay, make sure that in the bedroom is your wife, not someone else's. Okay. That's it. So, where is the meditation that all of my activities are engaged in the Lord's service? Doesn't exist. So that means God consciousness is going to the church for a couple of hours, and then the rest of the time just being a nice guy. You understand? So as far as they can get is morality. Right? Where is the point of God consciousness and doing everything for God? You find a few people sitting in monasteries, they're trying to do that. But it's just by contemplation. Right? And by not engaging in gross material activities like others. But the detail of how to engage everything in God's service is not. So the options are less. Well, in Krishna consciousness, the Vedic culture, the options are more. You can meditate on Krishna, you can connect your services to Krishna, you can. There's so many things you can do. Does that make sense? So in doing that, one has to understand that that's actually what you're trying to obtain, and see that the person, everybody's situated in a situation where they can do their service that will be beneficial to themselves and to others. And if they're making trouble for others, then needs to be some adjustment should be made so they don't make trouble for others, but they still get the benefit of engaging their conditioned nature. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So then we'll end here and then we'll continue tomorrow. Jaiho Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki Chaitanya Gaura ki.
Situation, and so he kept people in it, for example, say a sannyas ashram, when they may not be following the principles. So he said, now Prabhupada's not here, then let us win public and devotional society credibility by keeping people there who are following everything.
Okay, one, it's not an emergency now, people aren't going to hell left and right now. Right? Two, do you even know what the person's nature is that you could tell what it is anyway? Okay, if they're not going to be sannyasi, what are they supposed to be? How do you identify it? Right? Is an ashram a matter of just where you're situated? Or is it a matter of mentality? What is a grihastha? Just because you can put a man and a woman together in the same house, that's a grihastha? If the center of the house is not Krishna, they're a grihamedi. So who's in the center of the house? Krishna or being real? So you can have devotional grihamedis. Right? So it's a mentality. How do you know he's a sannyasa or not? Just because he's fallen away? Okay. Grihastha means, does grihastha mean a guy that's just with a woman? And so therefore it could be this woman, that woman, any woman, as long as he's a grihastha. So a guy who he goes around and sleeps around with everybody, is he grihastha? No, he's someone who is dedicated to one person. So what happens when a grihastha is off with someone else's wife? Do we say, oh, well, he can't do that, you know, public opinion, so he's, you know, GBC bans him from grihastha life, he has to give up his family and become a brahmachari. Ever heard of that? No, so therefore, we're dealing with fools here. It sounds great, but these people do not know what devotional service is. They wouldn't be able to identify the person's nature anyway. Now you can say it's an emergency, therefore people would be put into positions because they were there and willing to do it. But two things are there. One, they're willing to do it. So if you can take things slower, great. But then you have to be able to identify. So then what is his nature? tell me that? Can you tell me what your nature is? Okay, you're saying we have to take things and this and that. But since when is public opinion anything to do with Krishna consciousness? Right? Christians are good and nice, and do people think they're great? Jehovah's Witnesses are really, you know, strict. Do people like them? Never seen signs and doors? No JWs. You know what I'm saying? People think great about Mormons? Well, who do they think great about that are Christians or this and that? I think the Buddhists have got it better, are doing better than anybody. You know? You know what I'm saying? So what does this mean, public opinion? Which public? Which public? You think, you go down to the bar there, the pub there, you know, in Australia, and tell them one of the sannyasis fell down. Do you think those guys would care? So which public are you talking about?
I guess it must be the broader ISKCON, including everyone who knows what's going on inside.
It means us. The outside couldn't care less. What do they care? You know, things happen. Okay, people have trouble. Then you get it together. You move on. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, if someone makes a mistake, fine. People make mistakes. Correct it. Move on.
And if they're not the nature,
you know what I'm saying?
And if it's natural for them to exist in the lifestyle that a sannyasi has, then he should be there because he can function well.
Because that's what he'll do. You have to see what he needs. That's what Prabhupada would say. He would say, does he want to be a sannyasi or does he want to be a grihastha? He wants to be a grihastha, do that and continue doing the exact same service he was doing before. Mm-hmm. And if he wants to be a sannyasi, great, then get it together and move on. But the point is, the service continues, the preaching continues. First sannyasi, they're a preacher. So that's what they should be doing. They say, no, now I can't preach, can't do this, can't do that. Then what is he doing in devotional service? And if we're claiming that, well, public opinion, what does public opinion care? Do the public knows about it? Reuters, you know, it just came out and it's, you know, all teletypes and all news agencies of the world that, you know, this sannyasi did this or, you know, that brahmachari did that. It's there? No, we make it and it's amongst ourselves. Because all we have is morality. We don't have devotional service. If we had devotional service, we wouldn't be worried about it. When Prabhupada is here, devotees are falling down all the time. Right? You know what I'm saying? So then, how is it working? And when they came back, then hari ball, and they would just continue where they left off. You know, they'd be humble. They wouldn't be proud. But so what does this mean? Public opinion. What public opinion? Which public? Right? In the political, because this is a political consideration, right? Public opinion is a political consideration. At least in America, they've identified 9 different categories, completely different categories, of, you know, for votes. And each one of them thinks very different than the others. Certain groups by nature are leaning towards, you know, the Republican and some towards Democratic, naturally. But still within that, you know, it can swing depending on how they present themselves, you know. Does that make sense? 9 different. So which one of those 9 are you targeting? You say all of them, so then identify those 9. Do you even think those 9 of all that may even care? Right? Do you even care?